irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job on the second day of the new year. And with that said, a very happy new year to everybody. I hope everybody had a safe and fun time that they hopefully remembered. Today I have with me a special guest who's been one of my spiritual teachers for about 3 years now and has helped me have just an extraordinary life with a lot of the tools that she's taught me. With me today is Debbie Gion. Debbie has been an invaluable resource to women seeking a deeper understanding of the hidden meaning of their lives, purpose, and connection to one true self, as well as their unique gifts, potential, and unleashing all of those in their life. She has been intensively involved in spirituality as a teacher for the past 21 years, working on a variety of aspects of spirituality, predominantly focused in Los Angeles, New York, and Boca Raton. From her teaching style, and developed a different technique, a simple yet powerful teachings in helping students become the best versions who they can be in life. Debbie is excited to help women become beacons of light to people in their community. To this end, she's immersed in the development of programs focusing on relationships and women's issues, in addition to her teaching and private counseling, including a focus on personal and marital issues. Debbie has taught courses ranging from parenting to women's relationships to advanced studies in spirituality. And Debbie, together with her husband Eliyahu, who's also a spiritual advisor, live in Los Angeles with their three teenagers, which is pretty impressive. Having one teenager would be a lot, but three.
Three at the same time.
So Debbie, thank you so much for joining us today. And the reason I wanted to specifically have you on this show, the first show of the new year in 2017, is because you've helped me, like you just said in your bio, unfold and develop and really get more in touch with myself. In fact, one of Ian's cousins, my husband's cousins, posted on Facebook over the holidays and said, guys, you know, I have to admit, it was a horrible year. I don't love myself. I'm really struggling with it. And I consider myself to be so lucky that I have amazing teachers like you who have helped me grow personally and professionally. So tell our listeners a little bit about your spiritual journey. How did you become a spiritual teacher?
Well, I come from New Haven, Connecticut, and I grew up in a religious home, and I did not like religion. Had it shoved down my throat a lot. And so I went the other way. I was a rebellious teenager.
You and me both.
Yes. And so, you know, as far as I could get, I went the other way. And then one day I came upon a spiritual center. And things started making sense to me. I think one reason why I ran away from religion was because, you know, you have to do it because it says so.
Yes, that's the worst.
And I did not like that. I didn't like that. I wanted to know why, and nobody could tell me the why. And then I found the Book of the Zohar. It's called the Book of Splendor. And I started studying the why behind everything, how things happen, why they happen. You know, you had mentioned it's the second day of the new year.
Yeah.
And when we talk about the new year, when we say year, we think of time. And for me, time was always linear. You know, as a teenager, I didn't think that there was cause and effect. You don't think about that when you're a teenager.
No, there's no such thing. No ramifications to any
action. Do whatever you want.
And get away with it.
Yes. And slowly, slowly, when I started learning spirituality and understanding why things happen, I realized that time is not linear. Time is a circle.
Ooh, I don't even think I know this. Please keep going.
Time is a circle. So there is a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly circle.
Huh.
So what does that mean for us? Whatever you did last year is going to come back.
Huh.
Good and bad, unfortunately.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, we always say in spirituality there's cause and effect. You can plant good seeds. So most of us don't remember what happened every single day of 2016.
Except for the really good or the really bad.
Exactly. Exactly. So fortunately and unfortunately, every day, week, month of the year has its energy. And whatever you did last year, January 2nd, you're getting the effects now.
What? I don't think I ever knew this before. This is extraordinary. Uh-oh. Now I'm going to start having to journal what
so
I
now,
do.
Now I'm sure there are people out there saying, oh my gosh, I wasn't exactly the best in 2016. What am I going to do? So there is a tool that you can do to draw down positivity. Because
please.
We weren't all angels in 2016. So if you can, for 3 days straight, do acts of positivity.
Ah, okay.
You'll start drawing down the angels that will give you gifts.
Ooh, we like this.
Yes,
gifts and
do.
Angels. Okay,
yes.
Those are both good. No matter
yes.
what you believe, we all
so
know angels exactly. and gifts are good.
So basically, good actions create positive angels.
Mm.
And so the gifts that we get is the positivity of the day.
Oh.
So if we do, you know, we study in spirituality that anything you do for 3 days or 40 days becomes a habit.
3 or 40? Why is it 3 or 40?
So 3 is because it's right, left, and central columns. So it's the you know, the positive, the negative, and the balance. So, you know, the third day is always the hardest.
Okay.
Even if you start a diet, the third day is always the hardest. You know, the first day you're like, I'm going to do
this. I got this. I'm feeling good.
By the third day, you're like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. So if you overcome that, you're able to get to the next level.
So important for everybody to know, because we're almost at the third day of probably most people's New Year's
exactly.
resolutions, whatever those might be.
Exactly. So if we're able for 3 days straight now to do actions of positivity, and that could be from just smiling at somebody to actually going out of your way and doing something that you usually wouldn't do, then you start drawing down those angels.
Mm.
And so what happens during the year is whatever positive actions you did last year are going to come back.
Ooh, I like this. Keep going.
and on the other hand, any kind of negativity that you had, any, you know, victim consciousness, poor me, or any fights you had, so that energy is also there.
But okay, let me just make sure that we understand. So if you do 3 days worth of kindness and acts, it doesn't mean you go revert to being a jerk on day 4.
No.
Just
no,
so
no.
Nobody gets the wrong idea.
No,
everybody's like, I got my three
pass.
Days in for the year.
You know, like the free out of jail Monopoly. No. But it helps. It helps to draw down the
to positivity. Mitigate the yes. consequences of your negative actions the prior year.
Right. So now when things might happen not so great this year, we just need to take a minute, sit back and try and remember, where were you last year on this day?
Okay.
And if you can do that, and maybe you remember that you weren't maybe so positive, you can, if you know how to meditate, or if you can just sit back and write it down. What did I do that wasn't so positive?
Mm.
And you can change it.
Oh.
Either by going back and confronting the person, or doing a meditation and confronting it in your meditation. Whatever it was, you can fix it. So there's always a second chance.
I like that. Okay, so we're not completely screwed if we were a jerk or an asshole in 2016. There's
exactly.
still room to recover.
Yes, there is.
Okay, good. So that's good to know. And what's the 40 days? What's the significance of that?
The 40 days, so it, according to the Zohar, 40 days is the time that a person can build a habit.
Oh, okay.
So anything you do for 40 days becomes part of your personality. You have to do it 40 days straight.
Interesting. And it does make a difference, because you can create good or bad habits. And I know one of my friends and I over New Year's were talking about it, and it doesn't matter. Even if I had one too many glasses of wine, I'm still going to spend an hour and a half in prayer and meditation every morning, no matter how I feel, because 3 years ago, that was the habit I created. And you do. You just feel like a nicer, friendlier, more calm human being when you take that time to create good habits.
Right. And usually the good habits are more about how we give and not how we get. Because if you think about it, good habits are, you know, either taking care of ourselves, which ultimately will help everybody around us.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, meditation and prayer is so that you can be nicer to somebody. So good habits are ultimately not for us. They're to help everyone around us.
That's interesting.
Bad habits are when we ruin ourselves.
You're right, because I think I've read some stuff, and I don't remember if it was in the Zohar or somewhere, another spiritual book that I was reading, is that when we make choices, bad habits are selfish. It's all about ourselves.
Us.
Like, for example, you can have chocolate, you can have alcohol, drugs, whatever people want to do. And it's, at the end of the day, going to have a negative impact on who you're being as a person. You have the sugar high, you come down off of that, you're hungover or going through whatever you're going through. And it does make you, a word I would use is reactive. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that when you indulge in negative behaviors, it makes you more reactive and more likely to hurt others in your life intentionally or unintentionally.
Right. And when you actually do the bad habits, the first thing that you're hurting is yourself. When you do good habits, the first thing you're doing is helping the world.
Yeah, and that's right. It's like you said, it's about giving. And sometimes I meet so many people who are in a dark place. And a lot of people I know had really challenging 2016s, whether it was in their careers, their professional or their personal lives with loved ones. And when you have nothing to give, when you literally don't have a shirt on your back that you can give to somebody, people say to me, well, you have it all. You don't have to worry about it because you can give. But it's not true. It's that, and I've said this many times, when I'm down to having nothing, when I've had zero in my life, the first thing I will do is donate that, give something, find a way to give back.
So giving back doesn't necessarily mean also, you know, money. It can
Good be point.
Time. It can be time and it can be love. There's three ways of giving: time, love, and money. And even if you have zero in your bank account, you have time and you have love. So everybody can give that. And a lot of people had a rough 2016. A lot of them.
You
a
saw
lot,
it all over social media. It was like, screw 2016. I just wanted to be done.
Year. But you know what? If we believe in spirituality, we need to sit down and say, okay, there are two things happening now in the world. One is that it's time for everybody to become their own leader.
Okay.
It's not about following someone anymore. It's about, are you in charge of your life? Or are you giving the power to somebody else? Because spirituality is about tools that we can use to make ourselves better, but ultimately, we need to be the leaders of our life.
So for any of our listeners out there who might be like, I have 12 bosses ahead of me, and it's all going to trickle down on me, and I have no control, and it's just not fair how I'm treated, how could that person be a leader in their life?
And that teaches a little bit about how people are, how they deal with their work. And so you can be a leader in your life in every single aspect. So those people that have 12 bosses, you know, in front of them, and it may never happen, they need to ask themselves if they're happy. Most of them are not.
Okay.
And if they're not happy, the question is, are you willing to do something to become a leader of your life? Like, I can tell you, I experienced something in this past year. You know, I also had a rough 2016, if I look at it. I came from a place where I was managing a whole organization and I was teaching tons and tons of students to a place where I almost could do nothing. And at some point I said to myself, okay, I went through the whole process, because we all go through the process. It's not like magic.
Yeah.
You know, I went from poor me.
Exactly, right?
Because that's the first place we all go to.
Victim. This isn't victim. Fair. We always go to this is not fair.
My husband calls it victim.com. So we can go from victim.com to, okay, why is this happening to me? To, I'm going to take control. And the going to take control can be scary, because sometimes you need to start from zero. But when you start from zero, you're taking control of your life. So I'm not saying that people should leave their jobs and quit and start from zero. That's not what I'm saying. But where in your life are you a victim, and where can you be a leader? Because most of us want somebody else to do the work for us.
So if somebody's in a situation, say, and their boss yells at them, and the normal gut knee-jerk reaction would be, that jerk, this isn't fair, I can't do this anymore. And you have to be careful, because you can go to the other side of, I just give up, which is more apathetic than proactive.
Right.
So what's the first step somebody could take to being a leader in their life? When that person's a complete jerk to them, they yell at them, they demean them, whether it's a boss or a peer, how would you encourage that person to create leadership?
Okay, so the first step is to try and detach yourself. I know it's really hard, but try and detach yourself from the situation and say, okay, he was being a complete jerk, but what was he saying? Maybe in something that he was saying, I can use for myself.
Ah, good one.
And through that, say, okay, no, it's not okay to be abused, and it's not okay for him to yell at me. But, you know, in spirituality, we believe that everybody is from the Creator. So even that boss who's a jerk that's yelling at you comes from the Creator. So what is the message? what, maybe it's a message to push me. Maybe I shouldn't be here under this boss. And maybe I just need something to push me to go to the next level. So if we can kind of just listen to the message instead of shooting the messenger, which is what we do most of the time, we become leaders.
It sounds, I hear what you're saying, because part of it too, and I think it was you or Moshe or somebody once upon a time told me this great story about when the Creator sends you a message, it can be in the form of a person. And if you reject it or you don't understand it, and it could go many different ways. Part of it could be going, wow, what can I learn from this? Part of this could be removing yourself, that it's like getting a letter. And so the Creator, if you believe in that, is sending you a letter saying, dear Debbie or dear Jennifer, here is this I have for you. And what do? You return it to sender. Oh, this isn't what I wanted. And so you keep returning to sender. What happens? You get 100, 200, thousands more of the same letter until you open it and you see what the lesson was learned.
Right. Yeah. Right. So there, if we can take the message, and a lot of times we don't want the message because it's uncomfortable. Because to be a leader means that you have to work. Not just physical work, or not just, you know, the job that you go to, but you have to work internally. You have to work spiritually on yourself. You have to say, okay, I'm not giving my power now to anybody. Everything that happens in my life, good or bad, is me. And that's not easy.
That's a big pill to swallow.
It is. That's not easy. You know, there are people who would rather just have a 9-to-5 job, make their money, and go home. And that's not bad. But I believe if you look around in the universe, the time is coming where people need to become leaders of their own world, of their thinking, of their whatever we're doing. You know, a lot of us go into a robotic mode. You know, if there are moms out there, just getting kids out of the door in the morning for school, you go into a robotic mode and you make sure everything is done. And I had a conversation with a mother who kept telling me, no, he doesn't like when I wake him up in the morning. And I said, well, how do you wake him up in the morning?
Good question.
And she said,
cookies
well,
you
know, I turn on the light and it's time to get up and, you know, you need to get out of bed. And I said, and if I did that to you, how would you feel? You know, start looking at your kids like human beings. You don't want to have somebody all of a sudden put a light on in your face and say, you know, jump out of bed. So becoming a leader means taking responsibility for my life.
I really got that out of what you just said, because here you could have a mother blaming a child, an employee blaming a boss. It's not fair that my children don't want to get out of bed. It's painful. But the mother's looking for that A, and it's like the perspective is she's already expecting when she goes in there that he's going to, or the child is going to, wake up cantankerous and pissed off. And so it's this double-edged sword where if she can take responsibility and realize, wait a second, what if I could create a healthier and more peaceful way for all of us to get up in the morning and be responsible? Then nobody has to be the victim, and you have a win-win for everybody.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I love this. So what are some tools you would give our listeners for creating a fulfilling year? You know, so far I know that you could create 3 days of positive acts of kindness, or 40 days, whatever you're feeling up for. Are there other tools that you would recommend that people could use to create an empowered 2017?
There are a couple of things, but the first thing you need to do is have a reality check.
Never fun.
But are you happy with your job? Are you happy with your life? Are you happy with your partner? Are you happy? That's the first reality check you need to do. And if you find that there are things you're not happy with, first write them down. You know, I'm not happy with my job, and I'm not happy with where I live. Okay? Then you have to say, okay, am I willing to change? Because change for some people is not easy. For most people, change is not easy. It's scary. It's the unknown. It's throwing yourself in, especially if you've worked for 10, 15, 20 years in a company, and then you realize you're not happy and you're blaming everybody around you, but really you're not happy. So fulfillment is, it's proportional. You have to think, okay, what will make me fulfilled? Because when you say fulfillment, you're looking for something to fill your lack. And what we want to be is happy. Happiness is much more important than fulfillment, because when you're happy, you'll be automatically fulfilled. When people are looking for fulfillment, just the word fulfillment, they're looking for something to fill them. So we're looking for something on the outside to fill us, which will never happen.
That's such an interesting point, because it's, you hear that all the time, the void. We're always trying to fill the void with clothes, cars, people, things, right. food. So how could one generate happiness internally rather than looking for fulfillment externally?
Okay, so that is where the reality check comes in. And that's where you need to sit down and really think, what makes me happy? What made me happy when I was 2?
Running around.
Exactly. What made me happy when I was 10? What made me happy when I was 20? And usually it's not so complicated to find the things that made us happy. We just forget. And we replace them with what we think we need. You know, we need a good job. We need to make money. We need to go to college. We need all of these things because we think that that's what's going to get us to the next level. If happiness and health is the top priority, then everything else is just a tool to help us. It's not the goal is not the fulfillment. The goal is the happiness. So whatever we're doing, we need to say, why are we doing this? It's sort of like a wake-up call. It's to say, okay, every time you do something, why am I doing it? Do I want to do it? And if I don't want to do it, why don't I want to do it? It's a lot of asking yourself questions. It's a lot of digging inside. It's not about other people, because how we act with other people is just a reflection of what's going on inside of us. You know, when people get mad at us, 99.9% of the time they're not mad at us. It's something else that happened in their life, and we just happen to be in front of them.
The punching bag.
Yes, exactly. So it's really taking time to say, okay, what makes me happy? What do I want to get rid of in my life? What's not good for me? What's the opposite of making me happy? And not giving in to those things that don't make us happy.
And that's the thing. It's like a Band-Aid. We think in the short time, you know, oh, I've had a crappy day at work. I'll just have a beer or a glass of wine or an entire pizza or whatever it is. But it's just filling our void in an unhealthy way, as opposed to, like you said, what really brings you joy? I remember somebody else once said, what fills your buckets?
Right.
Because you need it. For me, it's a massage. I just had a phenomenal massage today. Shout out to Bayer at Massage Place in Brentwood. He is extraordinary. But I know that I am not as good of a human being, and I'm less peaceful if I don't take care of my health and well-being, because I move at 100 miles an hour every moment of every day, and so I need the stillness in the morning or when I get a massage or a hot bath to ground myself.
Right. And especially women, by the way. Women think that they have to do it all by themselves without asking for help.
Men have no problem. They're like, oh, you got it. They'll let the day. And I say this with all the love in my heart. Not all men, but
yes,
certain men.
So if you don't find that thing that's going to make you happy for you, and that could be taking the 10 minutes and meditating. That could be sitting down and writing a list of things that you don't want in your life. But don't look for the external to make you happy. Don't look to be fulfilled. Look to be happy and be healthy and do the things. You know, there, people think that a relationship is about what a person can give you. You know, I want my soulmate because I want them to make me happy and I like it when I'm with someone. What are you giving them?
So true. And we hear that in job seekers all the time, particularly with millennials. And they'll say, oh, well, I want this job because it's good for me, because it will give me X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And that's where a lot of job seekers, millennials or otherwise, shoot themselves in the foot, is they make it all about how the company can make them happy and what they're going to get out of it. And nobody wants that one-sided parasitic relationship where somebody's just sucking something out of somebody else, which could be a personal romantic relationship or a professional one.
Right. So we always have to think, okay, usually when a person is unhappy, it's because they're not sharing. And again, time, love, and money. So if someone is depressed, it's because everything is about me, 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 me. If someone's not happy, again, in the end, it's about me. So women who think that they can do everything, they're trying to be good wives and good mothers, and but it's ultimately not about the other person. It's not about their children. It's about them being a good mother. It's not about their husband. It's about them being a good wife. I always say one way to check if you're really sharing and giving is in the end of the day, if you come home and you feel happy and you have energy, you've been giving all day. If you feel drained and tired and you don't want to talk to anybody, you've just been taking.
Really?
Because when you give to the universe, it's not about money. Again, it's time, love, and money. So when you give, when you're in the consciousness of what can I do, not from a pleasing point of view, but from how can I really help this person? Because I need to give for me. So when you come from a place of, I want to be able to share so that I can be happy, you'll get extra energy. Mm. You'll have that adrenaline rush of, you know, when you jog and you have that extra mile, that's what you'll feel.
That's so great. And it's so funny. It just made me think, too, of a conversation I had with my mother-in-law, who I adore. And she and I have very different ways of dealing with upset. When I get upset, and we had a beautiful conversation about two nights before New Year's, she said, well, Jen, how would you describe me? And she was really willing and open to hearing it, because sometimes there are things we don't know about ourselves. And it's only by helping or being open to self-reflection or other people's input that we can discover this. And for me, better or for worse, and I am working on the worst part of it, when I get upset, I'm very vocal. I'm very clear about, this doesn't work for me. Now, I'm working on making sure that when I express my upset, it doesn't hurt other people and that my needs are still met in a healthy way. But people like my mother-in-law, and many of you out there, I'm sure, have a situation where they go internal.
They shut down.
Yeah, they shut down. And then their needs are not expressed. And then it leads to sadness, frustration, upset, because there's a lack of self-expression available to certain people. And one thing that I found creates greater happiness for myself is being able to be self-expressed in a way that is conducive to others, that's not harmful. It's like, hey, Debbie, this didn't work for me when X or Y happened. And then you're able to create a dialogue about it, whether it's in the workplace or with a significant other or a friend. It just creates a greater workability in all of your relationships.
Right. And then there are people who shut down and don't know how to express themselves. And I always say one outlet is writing. Usually people who aren't good verbally are very good writers.
Oh, you're so right. My brother-in-law is one of the most exceptional writers I've met, and he's gotten more vocal over the years, but he used to be the same way, as he would like bring it in until he would blow up like a volcano.
Right. So if you're not a verbal person, write it down. If you don't know how to communicate with your spouse or your friend or whoever it is, you know, we're in the era of social media and emails, and write it down.
And sometimes don't even send the email. Something that's really helped me in the business world is, you know, you just get pissed off at a client, a candidate, a situation, something happens in life. And before, I used to hit send on those emails. Not productive. I do not recommend trying that. Thank God. I either get coaching from my business coach now before I actually hit send, or I just send it to myself. And it saves me so much drama.
Yes,
you know?
It's a release. It's a release of energy that you eventually need to learn how to communicate. But if you're a person that's an introvert that you don't know how, or you don't have the tools yet to do it, writing is, it's also a way of communicating. And asking for what you want is okay.
Because
if you don't know how to ask what you want, you'll never get it. And that's something that, you know, if we want something, we need to ask the creator. But if we... Now, when we ask, I'm not talking about, you know, the 2017 SUV Lexus with the sunroof and the beavers on
Why
the side.
And,
but if you really want something, if you truly want to achieve something, if you want a better relationship with someone, if you want to get better, ask for it. But be careful what you ask for.
You get exactly what you want. And that's what really terrifies me in both a good and a bad way. I just reflected back last year in October 2015, I had rewritten my 5-year plan. And it's something I do every 5 years. And I start off in the year that's 5 years away. I think it was 2020 in my case. And I create my dream life. Like, what do I have? Is it kids? Is it a house on the beach? What does it look like? And I explicitly detail that whole year in 2020. And then once I do that, I'm like, okay, great. Now, where did I need to be at in 2019? Debbie, I started crying out of gratitude. I pulled up the email of what I had said was going to happen by the end of 2016. Everything, having a radio show. I forgot I even wanted a radio show. You know, having a new house that I've always wanted close to the ocean, like things that were extraordinary beyond my reach or expectations.
Right.
And yet I asked for it. But in the same way, you have to be careful what you ask for, because
right.
You can also get things that it's like the genie, you know,
yes.
Where you wind up with the wrong thing,
yes.
The 12-inch pianist,
yes.
Instead of
exactly,
the other thing.
Exactly. And also, when you ask for something, you need to be willing to do something for it.
Really good point. You're absolutely right, because so many people I know, they say, oh, it's not fair. Why don't I have my dream job? And it's because you have to take action. It's your
right.
Action times your request or your intention that equals
exactly.
Your success.
And also, what are you willing to give to the creator? What are you willing to give to the world to get what you want? Because really what we want seems to us like miracles. you know, your five-year plan seems like it, there are things that could be miracles. So what's a miracle? A miracle for us is something that's out of nature. What are we doing to behave out of our nature?
Oh, I love it. Because say more about that.
If we want a miracle, we need to act like a miracle. So a miracle is out of nature in our world. And if we want a miracle, what are we willing to do that's against our nature? And that's something that we need to look at and really dig deep. Because when I said you need to do a reality check, there are people who see everything good. And there are people who see everything bad. So what is out of your nature is to be exactly the opposite of what you're used to. That's out of nature. Because if it's in your nature to see only the good, you need to start seeing the bad, but not seeing the bad in a negative way. Seeing the bad so that you can make it better.
So elaborate more on that, because I remember, I think there was a great quote that you even told me one time that I know I've referenced in different talks I've given about, if you see a thing as good, it becomes good. If you see a thing as bad, it becomes bad. So how could
This is not about good and bad the way we know it, but it's more about, okay, again, reality check. There's a situation, and there are people who will see the cup half full. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is they get upset or they get disappointed. Why? Because things happen on the way. And maybe they didn't get or it didn't look like it did in the beginning. So what happens is when you look, it's not looking for the bad as a negative thing, but looking to where it's almost like there's a force called Satan, which is a negative force. And Satan comes in when you're complacent. So a person who sees everything good, everything is perfect in my life. I don't need to change anything. I don't need to work. Everything is perfect. So people who see everything as perfect eventually will say, oh my gosh, this suddenly happened.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So nothing happens suddenly. It's been there. You just didn't look for it because it could be uncomfortable. So it's not to not see the cup half full, but it's to see where is it missing a little bit that I can add. And that goes back to being a leader. Because when you're the leader of your life, not everything is perfect all the time. And instead of getting upset about the bad things or getting upset about things that we didn't expect, look for them. Look for where something could go wrong. Try and be prepared for something to go wrong. And then if it goes wrong, at least you know you gave your 110%. But if you look at something all the time and say everything is perfect, then we fall into complacency. And then we don't strive for more. It's sort of like if you don't look for the bad things. I don't want to say bad. It's a lack of...
Missing. I like the word missing.
Yes.
I like the word missing.
If you don't look for the missing things, then you'll never push yourself to be more.
That's so brilliantly put, because I think I fall into that trap, and it is a trap, quite honestly, of sometimes I look for the good in everything and everyone, and then in the same way the person who goes internal blows up, I'm the same way as, God forbid, that something upsets the apple cart, so to speak, then I do blow up. I'm like, this isn't fair. Why is this happening? No matter how much spiritual work you've done, if you're not constantly looking out for what's missing, then you could fall back into old patterns, behaviors, or ways of being that don't empower you.
And the first thing you need to do this year for yourself is the people in your life who are not helping you strive for more shouldn't be in your life.
So what about family? So if you have somebody who's in your family, like there are the people who we can choose to have in our life or not. And let's be very clear to all the listeners out there, everything is a choice. And I hear what you're probably going to say is family too. But the question is, family is family. It's blood. So do you still choose to engage with them even if they're coming from an unhealthy place?
So, you know, family is family. And usually the ones that are closest to us are the ones that, you know, push our buttons. But there's a line of engagement. So you need to be with Human Dignity, and you need to check on them, and you need to be nice to them, and you need to see them at family events, but they don't have to be in your daily life.
So the same would be true of colleagues then. So if you have colleagues who might be the negative people or might be the pessimists, then the choice would just be to disengage with them as much as possible while still treating them with human dignity.
Exactly. Especially if there are people in your life that do not want you to grow. or they don't want you to become better, or they just keep you where you are. And, you know, you're great at what you're doing, just stay where you are. That's, you need to run the other way. So, and of course, with human dignity, right? Nice, but, you know, I need to leave now. So, yes, there are people that we can cut out of our life, and there are people that are blood related to us that we can't cut out of our life, but we can choose how much we want to engage with them.
I think that's really well put, because I'm sure just coming off the holidays, many of us had family
members,
Christmas parties with people we don't necessarily want to spend extra time with. And I think it's choice. Like you said, it comes back to just choosing how much or how little you want to engage with that person. And that way you're creating a safe space. It really comes down to safe space for you, because it's energetically draining. I've had other spiritual teachers and friends of mine who've explained, like, you have to watch out because people can suck the energy right out of you, literally.
Exactly. And there are a lot of people who want to be fixers.
Hmm.
And you can't fix everybody, because sometimes people don't want to be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, I have a student who, she's dealing with a niece who's a drug addict. And this person has left the rehab every single time in the middle.
Oh.
And she's not getting better. You know, and she called me, the student called me and said, you know, what can I do? I said, you really can't do anything, because this person needs to hit bottom. And as painful as it is, and that's one of the extremes, but we go around trying to fix people. And we don't realize that some people don't want to be fixed. And even though we can see, you know, our eyes look out, so it's easier for us to see what's wrong with the other person, and we want to help them. But sometimes the helping them isn't really for them, it's for us.
Mm.
And so we need to see the balance there.
I think it's important, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier. Everything in life is balance. You were talking about the left and the right and the middle column, and that has to do with some of the spiritual teachings that I know we've talked about in the past. But I think everything, if one thing is more on one side or more on another side, you're going to be out of balance.
Right.
Interesting. Well, you've given some great stuff. Any other tips on shifting one's perspective or anything else you can think of that might empower people, whether it's personally, professionally, with children in the coming year?
I think one thing is being honest with yourself. You don't have to be honest with everybody around you, because sometimes it can hurt their feelings, but be honest with yourself. When you go to sleep at night, be honest with yourself. What did I do today? What did I say today? Was I being real? Am I being real? With children, it's, have you told them about yourself? You know, the moms and dads out there, if you make yourself perfect, your children will think that they need to be perfect.
Mm.
Tell them stories of your, you know, your rebellious years. It's okay. They won't believe me. All the kids of this generation are much better than us. So we've done it all. And if we tell them that we've done it all, you know, I had a silly conversation with my teenagers. I have two teenage boys a year apart, 15 and 16.
Oy vey.
Yes. And we literally said to them, listen, alcohol, cigarettes, anything you want to try, try it at home.
You know what's so funny that you say that, Debbie, is that my husband Ian and many of the healthiest people I've met who didn't go into drugs or alcohol for the most part and have very healthy relationships with any of substances are people who came from homes like that. My parents were the opposite, and I love my mom and dad, and they said, don't you dare touch drugs or alcohol. I'm like, screw you. I am going after all of it.
Right.
But the people who have taught their kids and said something to that effect of just being open and saying, hey, you want to do it in my house. I just want to make sure you're safe, and you know, that way you can have your experience.
Right.
And most of the time, kids get over it. It's more the allure of, oh, I want what I can't have.
Exactly. And I mean, I have a drawer at home that's the sugar drawer.
Oh, no.
And they know if they want it, it's there. You know, I've never said no. And my 16 and 15 year old now want to look good and they want to be fit, so they don't touch it. But it was always there. And that goes to the tools for this year of being open. Being open to messages, not taking things personally. And if you can not, and of course, there's a line of, you know, abuse and all those things. I'm not talking about
healthy
that,
boundaries. Yes, always play
healthy
a part.
Boundaries. But if you can be open to messages, if you can be open to the universe and not be afraid of who you are, accept who you are. You know, we all have flaws. We all have our stuff. But this is who I am. And I'm working on myself, and I don't need to hide it. If we can do that, then we can become better.
Yeah, and I love what you said, too, about the evening thing, is that's a great exercise, is I set my list of what I'm most grateful for in the morning, and I set my intentions in the morning, but I pay very little attention to the evening. And when you think about it, it's actually one of the most important times, because you have that opportunity to reflect on your actions, how you treated other people, how you were treated,
right.
And you always have that opportunity on the evenings where I do recall to do that before I go to bed. It does give me a stronger sense of empowerment of, oh, was that authentic? Oh, was that not authentic? And I think what's important for our listeners to know is it's not about making yourself good or bad. That's the other thing, is sometimes we'll punish ourselves of, oh, I was a real jerk to that person. I'm a horrible person. I can't go to sleep tonight. You know, it's just realizing and just being accountable. It takes it full circle back to what you were saying about leadership, is if you can be accountable for everyone and everything in your life, that's the greatest power you can have, is then you're 100% responsible for all the good and 100% responsible for all the bad, and you're never a victim again.
Right. And there's a little meditation that you can do at night where you can ask forgiveness from everybody and you can forgive everybody.
How? Please.
So it's just basically you sit down and you look at everything that happened that day. Okay, whose feelings did you hurt and who were you hurt by?
Mm.
And you just go down and you start with, okay, whose feelings did I hurt? And one by one in your meditation, ask them for forgiveness. You don't have to do it physically. If you can, that's great, but you don't have to do it physically. And through the meditation, they'll feel the energy, because most of what people remember is what we don't say. So when you do the meditation, ask them for forgiveness.
I think that's brilliant, and it's so great. And I think it's the perfect message that people need to hear on the second day of a new year, is that we have tools. There are ways that if you screwed something up, forgive yourself, forgive another person, and you don't even have to, you know, go around and have your list of people one by one. You can do it and engage with people, and it's energetically. No matter what you believe, whether you're spiritual or not, we've all had that experience where I think of Debbie, Debbie calls me, you know? And so if you send energy in a positive way in your meditation to that individual, I think it's a brilliant tool to help people in the year.
Yes.
Any other tools or tips before we wrap the show up?
That's it. I think we have a lot to do this year.
I know, right? We have a lot to accomplish. And I'm very excited about your company, femalesoulwellness.com. That website will be up in the next month or so, I believe, right?
Yes.
And then your husband, Eliyahu, it's his website is Eliyahu, and then G on your last name, JIAN.com, right?
Yes.
And he is an extraordinary spiritual teacher, too. I think I've had the privilege of hearing him talk a couple of times.
And there is an amazing tool there that we just put up, where it's the weekly affirmations, where every week you have an affirmation or you have something that will help you get through the week on a spiritual level.
Oh, that's awesome. I remember we were talking about that earlier. And it's so important because, like you said at the beginning, every week, every day has different energy. And I think what you were saying is what he's offering will tie into that.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, Debbie, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's a wonderful start to 2017. I'm so excited for all of the extraordinary lives all of our listeners are about to disembark on this year. And if you ever miss our show again, you can find it live on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job. And you can subscribe and get the show weekly there, or you can always find it on the archive of the LA Talk Radio website at Get Yourself the Job at LA Talk Radio. So thank you so much, everybody. A happy, safe new year in 2017, and look forward to having more extraordinary guests like Debbie on the show. Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.